from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called out Facebook yesterday for, quote, lying to the public after the company refused to remove a doctored video shared by President Trump in which she appeared to stammer. She also took Facebook to task for its role in Russian interference in the 2016 elections. Pelosi's comments were part of a conversation with KQED's Scott Schaefer, who talked with her about a range of issues, including impeachment. And Scott joins us now to talk about the fallout from Pelosi's remarks yesterday. And we'll also hear from Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Bauhaus about other political news, including reports that the White House ordered the U.S. Navy to hide a destroyer named after Senator John McCain so that the ship would not appear in photographs with the president. Welcome, Scott Schaefer.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, let's begin with talking about what Nancy Pelosi was talking about with you yesterday. And this is not a bashing Facebook morning. We just heard Jim Steyer talk about Facebook being the less responsive to this attempt at a public information campaign. But she did say they were essentially enablers for the Russians. And she also really took them to task in a kind of woodshed way.
She really did, Michael. And I have to say, I wasn't expecting her to be as tough on Facebook as she was. And she made clear, look, this isn't about me. She's been certainly the focus of a lot of hit pieces in campaigns, including the midterm elections. She's been vilified every single way you can imagine in campaigns. But her take was, look, if Facebook is allowed to have this kind of video and up and running when they know it's false, it's going to discourage other people from getting into politics, into public life, because they know that things can be twisted and manipulated, doctored, as this video was. And then also I have this clip of her talking about the policy itself and questioning the foundation of it and whether it was, maybe sexist.
I wonder what they would do if Mark Zuckerberg wasn't portrayed, slow down, made look like they were, I don't know what, drunk or something. I don't even drink, so they can chalk it up to chocolate, but I don't drink alcohol. Everybody was laughing. They said they've picked the wrong person in that regard. But is it one of their own? Would this be, is this their policy, or is it just a woman? But I do think that they have proven that they were willing enablers of the Russian interference in our election.
So making the point, they weren't victims of Russian manipulation. They were, at least willing. They knew what was happening, and they didn't do anything to stop it.
Interesting that you mentioned Zuckerberg, though, because as you may recall, when he was talking about defending First Amendment rights and all of that sort of thing, he said, I'm Jewish and I object to Holocaust denial, but things have been said about me that are false, and so false things are somehow countenance, an analogy which many people got very angry about, understandably. But the reality is that they have taken down Alex Jones, for example. They've taken down Louis Farrakhan. So I don't know about the gender in this, but don't you think they're afraid of being seen as a publisher and being broken up because of that, if they're censoring?
Well, I think they're concerned also about being perceived as partisan. The right has the right wing, and websites and others have accused Facebook and other social media platforms of being biased against conservatives. And Nancy Pelosi, of course, has emerged as the top critic, the most powerful and maybe effective adversary to President Trump. And perhaps they're concerned about taking it down and making it look as if they're trying to help the Democrats.
She did say in the interview you did that they got some good court decisions. Things have to be taken slow-paced, fact after fact and so forth. Nobody's above the law, the usual kinds of things. The needle isn't moving as far as Speaker Pelosi is concerned with respect to impeachment, but you've got Jerry Nadler talking about it. You've got a whole part of the caucus talking about it. I mean, she's kind of really between a rock and a hard place here.
She really is. And, some of the members of her caucus, especially some of the newer members, but not just the newer members, ones who are particularly those in safe Democratic districts, have been calling for impeachment for some time. We had three more presidential candidates, including Kirsten Gillibrand and Cory Booker and Pete Buttigieg, sort of moving in that direction, calling for impeachment. And when I talked to her about that yesterday, she knows this is an inherently political process, impeachment, and it has to be done in a bipartisan way, which is what happened in Watergate, is Republicans came around and they finally got, President Nixon's attention. He left office, as opposed to what happened in the late 90s with the impeachment of President Clinton, and it was sort of a backlash against the Republicans. She very much wants to avoid that. She did say she has faith in her chairman, including Jerry Nadler, to do this properly, but she also said this, which I thought was very interesting.
We'll see. I mean, we'll go where the facts take us. We have to have the facts, and we would like to have the facts presented in a way to the American people that makes it almost impossible for the Senate to exonerate.
And of course, you can't exonerate Michael unless you've been impeached or convicted. So there's an implied impeachment there, which, of course, you know, may be calculated on her part to sort of, you know, give a nod to those in her caucus who really want this to move forward.
She also was saying words to the effect that the Senate, perhaps in being a jury, would be an enabler of crimes and ignoring the facts.
She did. She said that the framers of the Constitution never really anticipated having a Senate where members, a majority of members perhaps, would be, you know, in her description, oblivious to the facts and trying to protect a president of their own party. I think that this hyper-partisan environment that we're in maybe wasn't entirely anticipated by the framers.
Well, let me give out the phone number because I'm interested in finding out what you, our listeners, think of Speaker Pelosi's comments, not only on Facebook, but on impeachment. And you may want to add your own comments here or any questions to our senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, Scott Schaefer, about interviewing Speaker Pelosi just yesterday. You can join us at our toll-free number. I invite you to do that now. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so please feel free to be part of the program. Again, you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us, of course, by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Looking at a quote here from Speaker Pelosi, nobody wants to be impeached, right? Nobody wants to get caught, she said. And secondly, that he wants to be impeached maybe because then the Republicans, in their enabling, there's that word again, of their crimes, will exonerate him and say, he'll say, I've been exonerated, which is why we have to keep this up in courts. So there again is the rock in the hard place, and she's well aware of it.
She is, and she realizes and I think is concerned that Trump and many Republicans would like nothing more than for the House to impeach him, because then if he is exonerated in the Senate, not only could he say the Senate cleared him, but he could say falsely that Robert Mueller also cleared him.
Well, he's already said that.
He has said that, even though clearly that was not the case, and I think that was one of the headlines out of Robert Mueller's comments yesterday. He said that if his office had the confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. So you just read, it's not very hard to read between those lines and, you know, follow those breadcrumbs. And he very much implied, look, I've done what I can do. I didn't have the power to indict him based on the Department of Justice interpretation of the law. Therefore, Congress, it's up to you.
Well, you've been following a lot of breadcrumbs for quite some time. I'm just interested in hearing your take on what you think of the control that the Speaker now has over this caucus, because there still seems to be not only some fairly strong dissent, but some who would like to move toward impeachment and do so rather with alacrity.
Yeah, I mean, there was a group of Democrats who really she needed some of their support in order to become Speaker. She was a few votes short of the I think it was 218 that she needed, and she promised as part of getting their vote to step down and be Speaker for a limited amount of time. I think she promised to leave in 2022. But, you know, since that time, her esteem, she's become sort of a social media sensation with her red jacket and her sunglasses her ability to get under Trump's skin. She has somehow perfected that in a way that few Democrats have. And I think there's probably a growing esteem for her within the party, even as there is this growing ferment for the House to act and open an impeachment inquiry. So, you know, as she knows and as the caucus knows, look, you can be unhappy with a Speaker, but you have to have somebody who can get more votes than she can. So I don't think that's even on the table for the rest, you know, between now and 2021 when the new Congress comes in.
I want to get to our callers, but go back for a moment to the fake Facebook video, because Speaker Pelosi has essentially said that this is enabling Facebook to continue what they're doing in terms of putting things out there that shouldn't be put out there, but that it also pretty much speaks to you were talking about her having really being Trump's main adversary now. But the reality is that he's come back and come back strongly with this video, making it seem he's calling her Crazy Nancy. He didn't even have a nickname for her before. Now, suddenly, he's questioning her mental health. And that video seems she's stammering and she looks like she's got some problems either with alcohol or mental fitness. How much of an effect do you think that really has? I mean, the public is seeing these things and not necessarily getting the screen with the idea that it's fake. Thousands and thousands of people.
It's hard to know, and it's hard to know whether people really don't know it's fake. You know, perhaps they're sharing it because they don't like Pelosi and they just want to have fun, you know, and share it with their friends on Facebook or on Twitter. And I should say also there's two different videos. The one that Trump retweeted was not the one where she appeared to be drunk. It was from a press conference where it was also sort of altered in a way, but there were different ones. The one she was talking to me about was this one where she did, as you said, appeared to be drunk. And
the first one was the one that he tweeted.
Right, yeah, right. Exactly. But, you know, here's the way she described it to me in talking about what Facebook did or didn't do and, you know, why they, you know, why they're, you know, really complicit in this.
Facebook knows that this is false. They know that this is false. And yet they've decided to go. Now, we have said all along, oh, poor Facebook, they were unwittingly exploited by the Russians. I think wittingly, because right now they're willing to put something on that they know to be false.
And so clearly she's implicating them in a way that she hadn't before. In fact, after she made those comments about Facebook, it was at the very end of our interview. And she said sort of sotto voce, off mic, she said, was that tough enough for you?
Well, I want to get to our calls, but let me read a comment from David first, who says, I'd be the last person to defend Facebook, but because Nancy Pelosi is a public politician, satire and parody of her is fully protected by the First Amendment. I don't see where anyone should have any expectation of taking down the video.
Well, I don't think she's talking about filing a lawsuit. It's not a question of is it legal to put something like that up, but is it responsible to do it when you have a platform? And this plays into the bigger discussion about Facebook, Michael, which is, does it have too much power? It owns not just Facebook, of course, but Instagram, WhatsApp, and many other companies that it's acquired over the years. And there are some, like Elizabeth Warren, who say, you know what, that is too, and Kara Swisher, who has been a critic and a friend of Facebook in Silicon Valley, but she had a very tough op-ed in the New York Times.
I saw it. Yeah, it was tough.
And so I think that, you know, there's been too many instances now where Mark Zuckerberg or Sheryl Sandberg have been caught in making statements that weren't exactly accurate as more information has come out and more politicians on both sides of the aisle are losing patience with them.
It's a nice gentle way to phrase it, Scott. Let me say that. Let me get Robert on here. Robert, join us. You're on the air.
Good morning. Just wanted to briefly give my thoughts on the dialogue regarding impeachment. You know, the Democrats have been notoriously famous over the years for chasing narratives that have been designed by the Republicans. They don't seem to be able to pick a storyline or a narrative and stick with it. I'm particularly frustrated that when the impeachment conversation comes up, it's focused on collusion and obstruction, when in fact Mueller came out unequivocally stating that there is indeed a war on America. There is interference with our election process. It is unequivocal. It's been proven. And Trump continues to maintain that there is no such war and no such attack on our democracy and our electoral process. That should be the talking point for an impeachment. The fact that he took an oath of office to protect the Constitution and to protect America, and he's denying that there's a war that's even occurring. I'm just extremely frustrated that the liberals are going down the path of chasing these esoteric, very involved definitions of conspiracy and collusion, when I think the average American could easily perceive two very salient points.
Robert, you're starting to fade out here, but I appreciate your calling, and I'm grateful for that statement because it was said with a lot of passion, and we like to hear passion from our listeners. We also like to hear about other things in the news, and I'm going to go back to callers in just a moment, but I want to get Rebecca Bauhaus on with us. She's a reporter with the Wall Street Journal's Washington, D.C. Bureau, because another big news story that has surfaced has to do with the ship that's named after John McCain, and some of you may have been following this story. Wall Street Journal's been on top of it. Rebecca, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, what do we know at this point? It's the president is denying that he got the SS John McCain out of sight to disturb him because of his adversarial role and really saying to some extent things about John McCain, even after he was dead, that were very unflattering indeed. What do we know in terms of the president's role in this? He's, like I said, denied it completely.
Right. So we have no indication that the president was involved in this request. And from what we know so far, we've reviewed emails that that indicate that the White House military office was seeking the USS John McCain be moved or somehow obscured so that it was out of sight for the president's visit. Now, our initial stories never made any mention that the president was directly involved in that, but I would also note from his comments today that he, while he said he was not aware of it, he seemed to effectively endorse the move, saying that they believed that they were doing him a favor because they know that he's not a big fan of John McCain.
Well, he tweeted yesterday evening about the USS McCain. I was not informed about anything having to do with the Navy ship USS John S. McCain during my recent visit to Japan. Nevertheless, and I love being our great military men and women and so forth. What a spectacular job they do. But the fact of the matter is, Washington Post has now tallied up the number of lies that have come from this president. And I think it's breaking all records of every president, even including going back to George Washington, who supposedly never told a lie. What do we know in terms of where this order came? At this point, it's just totally unfathomable.
That's really what we're trying to find out at this stage is we know that there was this initial order that came from the White House military office. We know that once it reached a certain level of senior officials at the Navy, that they appeared to push back in some way on this and ultimately decided not to move the ship. But we don't know yet where in the White House military office the request originated or whether somebody else weighed in that was something that the office should pursue.
Well, the Secretary of Defense said it was atrocious, and he praised John McCain as a patriot. Remember, of course, that President Trump said he's no hero. He was captured. Thank you, Rebecca Balhaus. Good to have you with us on Forum this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Meghan McCain tweeted in response to this story, Trump is a child who will always be, that is John McCain's daughter, will always be deeply threatened by the greatness of my dad's incredible life. There is a lot of criticism of how much I speak about my dad, but 9 months since he passed, Trump won't let him rest in peace, so I have to stand up for him. It makes my grief unbearable. Is this going to actually move anybody in the base, Scott Schaefer?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the things he said, I think there were a lot of folks when he said, look, I don't like people who got captured, referring to John McCain being a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. When he said that during the campaign, I think it was early in the campaign, I think a lot of people thought, oh, well, that's the end of Trump. So he does have this, you know, kind of Teflon covering that doesn't seem, you know, no matter what he does, seems to affect his base. But I think what we're seeing here partly is that, you know, some of the people around Trump who would have stopped these kinds of things from happening, people like John Kelly and General Jim Mattis, are gone. And you have fewer people who can stand up to him or who can say, yes, sir, I'll make sure that happens, and then ignore it. You know?
Well, here's a theory. Maybe Trump did not order the John McCain ship to be moved, but somebody under him did because they thought it would please the master. It
absolutely could be possible. I sort of doubt that. I don't think the military works that way so much. And I would guess that there's a great deal of respect for John McCain within the military itself. And this wasn't just, you know, one thing. It was several things. It was nobody from that ship was invited to the ceremony with Trump, unlike all the other ships that were there in Japan. The name was covered up very obviously. So this, you know, this wasn't something that just kind of happened because one person did something or said something. This was clearly something that was done and implemented, you know, by somebody's order. I mean, anything that happens in the military, unless it's a crime, is usually, you know, at the order of a higher up.
But Trump never let go of his anger against McCain for voting against the health bill that he wanted and that the Republicans wanted. And it's interesting how, who's the congresswoman from Minnesota, the Democrat who served in the military? She called him Cadet Bone Spurs. And now you have Mayor Pete talking about, you know, his not serving his country and refusing to do so and using essentially bone spurs as an excuse when it was probably deceitful and probably even fraudulent. But where does this blowback go? You know, that's the real question.
Yeah, I think it doesn't really change anything. It just reinforces people's feelings. I mean, there may be some people on the margins who maybe voted for Trump who, you know, were sort of looking for somebody to shake things up, but, you know, it's getting harder and harder to defend things like this. Now, again, as you said, we don't know if the president actually ordered this, but, you know, it's probably something he would not have stopped if he'd heard it was about to happen.
Well, more people want to talk with you about your interview with Leader Pelosi. Let me get Casey on next. Casey, join us.
Hi, Hi. Thanks for the program today. I have not been a huge fan of Nancy Pelosi for the last couple of few decades. I feel like in 92, she overplayed the Democratic hand by saying that there was this huge progressive mandate, and that set up the Newt Gingrich and neocon wave that kind of has been plaguing us ever since. But on the issue of this impeachment matter, I think she is walking the right line. I think she's demonstrating a moderation that is actually gratifying, and I think it's much more encouraging than some of the other folks that want to pull it in the other direction.
Okay. I thank you, Casey, for that point. Want to comment, Scott?
You know, I think I've always said about Nancy Pelosi that the things she does best are the things that nobody sees because they happen mostly behind closed doors. And the things that she does least well are the things that everybody sees, like public speaking and press conferences. But I think in the last few months, that's kind of been turned on its head. The things she does really well that people generally don't see are strategy, keeping the caucus together. And
raising money.
Raising money, of course, as well. But I think that her ability to stand up to the president and to do it in a mostly respectful way.
She's praying for him.
Which is, you know, also kind of a back of the hand sort of thing. I just feel that she's getting a second look from a lot of people. We've seen that in the approval ratings that she's gotten. It's gone way up as people have taken a second look at her. You know, she's often been dismissed as, you know, quote unquote, a San Francisco liberal. But I think that a lot of Democrats now see the value of having someone with her experience and her acumen and ability to, you know, see that three-dimensional chessboard.
Well, she's also said with perhaps some prescience that if President Trump is not reelected in 2020, he will declare a fraudulent election, and he will rally the troops such as they are and those who are behind him. He's talked about before police officers and bikers and all of these kinds of supporters that he feels he has. Got to wonder about that as well. In fact, let me read some comments here that are coming in. Joe says, must the Senate try articles of impeachment? If the House impeaches, do we know that Mitch McConnell won't pull a Merrick Garland and ignore the duty?
Ignore the duty, meaning not have a vote on impeachment?
Presumably.
I don't know. I think more likely he would make sure. I think he would want to stamp it out really fast. I think rather than sit on it and have it linger, that would just increase the pressure on him. My guess is he'd want to dispense with it rather quickly.
A couple other quick questions. Mary wants to know, would it be better for Congress to censure the president rather than go for impeachment, which seems not to be a great political move?
Perhaps. I mean, that's certainly something that's on the table. That's another option. It would be less politically divisive and would take less time.
Doesn't have much teeth, though.
And really. But you might also put some Republicans in a tough spot, you know, whether or not they would actually could vote for censure without knowing that we're not talking about impeachment. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure Pelosi is thinking about that. But at this point, I think what she really wants to do is to give her chairman on the Judiciary Committee and the other committees the power to get the documents, get the testimony that they need to lay this case out so that they can decide whether or not to open an impeachment
inquiry.
And
lay it out in a way that the Republicans simply can't deny or have to be at least circumspect about, regardless of the political effect it's going to have on them. Here's Cheryl, who says, would it be possible for Congress to draw up articles of impeachment based solely on the Mueller report without calling additional witnesses?
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of flexibility, Congress does. Just look at the things that he's done to stonewall the investigation in Congress by refusing to allow some of his staff and former staff to testify, trying to block blocking their access to subpoenaed documents and so on. I mean, it wouldn't be hard to draw up articles of impeachment based on what's already happened and what's, you know, been in the report that Mueller released.
Here's another caller, and Jeff joining us from San Leandro. Jeff, welcome.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a statement regarding the Mueller statement about if we could, with confidence, say he didn't commit a crime, we would, or something along that line. I'm sorry, I don't have the context right. But right after that statement by Mueller, there's a comma there, and he says, nor do we have confidence to say that he did commit a crime. And it seems like the media is selectively eliminating that portion of the statement from what they're releasing to the public. So I blame the media here as well. Media has a responsibility to deliver the truth and not selectively edit statements to reflect their position in life, I guess you might say. That's my comment.
All right, thank you for the comment, Jeff. We'll get a response from Scott Schaefer.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say about that. I mean, I think the most important thing was that he said that if his office had had the confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. And so the translation is, well, there's a pretty good chance the president did commit a crime. We just couldn't say it, and we couldn't indict because we weren't allowed to. So I think that's important, and I think probably the most important thing that he said.
Let me thank Jeff for the call. Go right to another caller. That's Gene. Gene, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about the Pelosi video, which I can totally understand is irritating to her and, frankly, shameful that it's being circulated. But that said, I think that it's important to note that Facebook did mark the video as false. They're leaving it up and not leaving it to viewers to decipher whether or not it's valid or not. So I just think that's an important point and, frankly, probably the better play for Facebook.
Yeah, point well taken. Thank you for that, Gene.
You should just point out YouTube did take it down.
Yeah, Twitter left it up, though. They didn't have false on it on Twitter, did they? No.
Yeah, and it still doesn't prevent it from getting shared. But, take the caller's point. It's a good one.
Another caller. Diana, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I wanted to pick up on Robert's comments a few minutes ago about how we should be thinking about the reasons for impeachment. He said that the Democrats make the mistake of following the Republican narrative and that a better narrative would be other ways in which Trump has failed us. He talked about the Constitution requiring that he pay attention to an assault by another country into our electoral process. I just wanted to add climate change. I think that's another place in which he is failing us dramatically. I think the military has said climate change is a threat multiplier. This young Greta Thunberg has given another speech just yesterday calling leaders of the world to account for failing the human race. So I think those two failures are far more important than collusion and conspiracy.
Diana, thank you for that call. Seconds left here. Scott, you want to respond?
Yeah, I think, that certainly the failure of the president to take seriously not just Robert Mueller's concerns, but also other cabinet secretaries that the outside forces are trying to influence our elections. It's a very serious issue. I think what Pelosi's remembering is that the midterm elections were a huge success for Democrats, not because they focused on Trump, but because they focused on health care, on jobs and the economy. And that is really what's on the minds of most voters.
And they also wanted some checks and balances, and they're getting it. Scott, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Scott Schaefer, senior editor for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk and co-host of Political Breakdown, a weekly podcast and radio program. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.